Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Normally, we'd be taking on one topic with one or two guests, generally a serious topic that is not given a fair and balanced presentation in the mainstream or even alternative media. However, because of my being out of the city and studio for several weeks, recovering from the hurricane and spending each day doing that, up until our retreat, I wanted to spend time seeing if we couldn't address the issues that are important in your life. Now, we have a wide variety of people listening all over the world, and those in Canada and the United States are able to call a number and address their issues on the air. Questions, comments, things that are constructive. The key is, what can you share with us that empowers us? And then I'll pick it up from there and see what I can add to it. Our call-in number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Also today, because I just now got back internet service, and which means that any people that emailed me over the last 2 weeks, those are all gone. Because when my computer shuts down, it automatically is a failsafe. It erases everything. So if you don't hear from me, it's because those messages are gone. I didn't know they existed. You'll have to replace them. But I do have some from today where people have been going to prnstudio@gmail.com where you can also ask your questions. Now, normally we have Elizabeth, one of our staff, who reads them and selects and comes on the air, but she is unavailable. So I asked them to send me just a handful in case people are thinking for a while what they want to share, ask. Remember, you can talk about anything. Everything's on the table. Any important issue to you, let's see if we can all learn something from it. 888-874-4888. Now, while the phones are waiting to light up here, a couple of issues that have come up. And one is concerning censorship. Today on my show, I read comments from Chris Hedges on silencing of dissent. I also shared some of my own commentary about the same issue. I'm going to begin with a little bit on that, and then we'll take your calls. I see that some of the calls are coming through. Paula from Florida.
Gary,
I'll be getting to you in a moment. I just want to do a little bit of commentary on this topic, which is important to a lot of listeners, then I'll come to you. And that is that unless you are aware that your ideas are being censored or you are being challenged or attacked, generally we tend not to pay attention. It only matters when someone knocks on our door. Then suddenly it gets our attention. Now, sometimes that knocking on the door could be a tornado, a hurricane, an earthquake, the consequences of gas hydrofracking, like in Oklahoma, in Kansas, where they're now having more earthquakes than they ever had in their history, and they're having that in the last 6 months. Same way in Oklahoma. So I would have a question. During that entire 10-year period, building up to the crisis we're in now with the consequences of hydrofracking, how many people who are now victims of that hydrofracking sought to address the issue with intelligence and insight by first educating themselves? Did they watch Gasland? Did they go up online? We had many, many articles that we wrote about gas hydrofracking, the problems with it, and calls to action. The answer is no. Were there major demonstrations in Washington, D.C. with our legislators? Again, no. In the people in Florida, in Miami Beach and Boynton Beach, West Palm Beach, Fort Lauderdale, Boca, clear down to the Keys and Plantation, was there a general consensus that sooner or later there would be some catastrophic event? And what were your plan A and plan B? The same is true on the west side of Florida, southwest Florida, where I live. Were there meetings and discussions? Were there concerned citizens saying, are we prepared? And the answer is, no, there were none. To the contrary, here's what you had. You had massive overdevelopment. You had people coming in and spending tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to buy up existing property, overvalued in a bubble, and then getting financing from hedge funds or equity partners or banks or development companies to put up the money to buy the land and then build all forms of condominiums and hotels and apartments, all for the idea that it'll never be enough, meaning there'll always be more people wanting to be in a special place. And indeed, these are special places. If we never had a catastrophic event, be perfect. The weather is phenomenal. The people are nice. The ocean is beautiful. The Gulf is beautiful. There's a more of a conservative value shared on the west coast of Florida and a more liberal value, a more open value on the east coast, especially down around Miami. But in all this sense of pleasure, there was no principle of a propheticness. What if? As a result, when it finally happened, and before it happened, I remember being down there when the last hurricane happened, and yes, I had Category 5 storm windows, but I went ahead in spite of that, and I put up storm shutters. Lucky I did, because a lot of the apartments in the small building I lived in were shattered, and mine weren't. But I can remember a buddy of mine, Tom Croft, and Tom's a big dude, like 6'5", and about 220 pounds, football player, and we're trying to hold the back end of the windows because those shutters were just ratcheting back and forth. It was really bad, and I said, Tom, this is a very important wake-up call, because only in a crisis do you find your sense of balance or lack thereof. Meaning only in a crisis in your relationship will you see whether or not you should be in that relationship. And if not, how to appropriately and with some decorum end it. Only in a business do you see are you in the right business, even if at one time it was right. Is it right today? Or is it still got time? Are you in the right place, even though at one time it might have been the right place? We like to think that things should be permanent. And of course, nothing's permanent. And if you doubt me, look in the mirror. And so it's being flexible and saying, for the moment I'm in, let me enjoy this moment. Let me be also conscious. What's the upside? What's the downside? Because otherwise, every time someone gets hungry, they're going to eat junk food because it tastes good and it satisfies their appetite. And they've been conditioned to like the taste of it. But then when they get a heart attack or a stroke, are they going to learn that lesson? Will that be the moment that the seeds of their karma that they planted sprout, and they're just not going to like what that karmic seed sprouts? I know recently I was talking with someone who, in fact, I've talked with four different people in the last 2 weeks who I know who are all homeless or about to be homeless, and they all share something in common. Not one of them planned for this. As a result, they were all left flabbergasted. And when you're really anxious, you're never going to make right choices. You're going to be angry at the world. You're going to blame everyone but yourself. But in a reasoned mind, when you wake up one morning, you take an inventory. Am I okay? Is my health okay? Am I making right choices? Are my relationship okay? If not, what's wrong? Can it be repaired or not? Should I move on, let it go? And that's also true for where we live. I'm assessing right now, am I still in the right place? Because for a long time I was. But this winter we had the worst fire in southwest Florida that I can recall. In fact, it was out of control. They had evacuated all the streets around me. An animal preserve burned to the ground. And only because I'd taken precautions did this place not burn to the ground. Because I had fire suits and the fire retardant materials and sprinkler systems on him, even doing something that people wouldn't think about. Could you imagine having a house where you're in fire-susceptible area and running hoses across the roof? You can't see them from the ground, so they don't affect the aesthetics. And then under the lip, on the sides and the eaves, so your entire house can be watered down. Now, it doesn't mean that it's impervious to fire. It means it makes it far less likely that a spark is going to start a fire because there's a lot of wetness. And then, were you prepared? Did you have a backup trailer so that you could put your most important belongings on them and drive them out of harm's way? That's true for a hurricane, a fire, anything that is a devastating consequence of the environment that you can't control. So now when you have one of the worst fires, then it means that this coming winter is going to be dry again, and there's going to be more fires. And then when you have another hurricane, and you just got hit with a Category 4, 158-mile-an-hour winds, and you directly were in line, you made the house right because it's standing, but you lost an awful lot of, vegetation. All right, most of that can grow back. All day today, planting trees, showing people by photographing how you do it and save your trees and how to refertilize, etc. But how many times do you want to do that? At what point do you realize this is not sustainable? So I've got the next 6 months before the next crisis could possibly occur. Now, if you think that's hyperbole, ask yourself this. We're dealing with 3.4 million people in Puerto Rico who will not have electricity, according to the governor, from 4 to 6 months. So without electricity, you have no air conditioning, and it's hot and humid all the time there. You have no water, no clean water. You have no food except what can be brought in, and only small amounts can be brought in at any given time. And the food that they're bringing in is not good food. It's primarily starchy food. So then you can't rebuild your homes. Those homes are gone. Because once the roof is lifted and the water saturates, then black mold forms, and you can't get rid of that. And then you say, but surely we could have prepared. Yes, you could have. But you could have prepared in U.S. Virgin Islands. You could have even prepared in let's say, the Dominican Republic or Dominica, the island. But no one did. St. Croix, St. Kitts, St. Lucia, no one did. St. Martin, no one did. Cuba, there's an irony. Cuba also got hit, and it could have prepared because it has mountains. It's a large state. It has enormous resources, but they're mismanaged. And Jamaica, same way. So here's a question. You're sleeping in a dry room with air conditioning. You can go to the tap, get whatever water you want. Take as long a shower as you want. You can go downstairs and go to a restaurant, eat what you want. You can go to a market and buy whatever you want. You can watch what you want on television or go to the internet. You can use your cell phone. But for 3.4 million people in Puerto Rico and another 1 million to 2 million people throughout the Caribbean, you're talking about over 5 million people have none of the above, zero. Now you realize when that happens, there's going to be pandemonium. There's going to be chaos. There's going to be anger, and then there's going to be mass exodus. Remember, people of Puerto Rico are not citizens, though 90% voted to become, a state. They are protected, a protectorate territory, which means they have rights similar to all U.S. citizens, and they can come and go. They don't need a special visa. So we're going to get inundated with people. Not that that's a bad thing, but we're not prepared for it. We don't have any public housing, and there's only so much room with in-laws and extended families for people to stay. So we're unprepared to help the people. We don't have a Marshall Plan for rebuilding it. And the question is, if you know you're going to be in an environment that's unsustainable, why stay there? Why? So when my friends, two of whom are real estate brokers, we're talking about how much value there was in real estate, and I said to them, I share a different point of view. I feel that Miami's going to be a ghost town, and that anywhere from $200 billion to $400 billion dollars in real estate is going to go down the tubes in the next 5 years, because Miami will get hit with a Category 5 plus in the next 5 years. The tidal surges will increase, night surges, meaning no storm, just surges, and they have no capacity to get that water out. You're going to have regular flooding, and that is going to destroy quality of life. The whole idea of building a highway 6 feet up further inland, that's just not an impossibility. There's no money for it. They're not going to get a bond for it. Bonds won't do it. It's just not. It's like saying we're in the middle of the Sahara Desert or the Mojave Desert, and we're going to build an oasis. We're going to put $1 billion into building an oasis. You're still in the desert. And we just have a hard time, because our entire life we live with this kind of manifest destiny. If we can build it, we can live in it. If we can live in it, we own it. If we own it, we're going to stay here and appreciate the value. And then we're going to borrow against that as if our home was an ATM machine. And then one day you end up going to a man who lives in my building in New York. And he stopped me in the gym 2.5 weeks ago. And he said, "I'm seeing something really odd, Gary. And I listen to your show sometimes, and I know you deal with this, because I know you have a background in economics and business before you got into nutrition," which is true. And he said, "I'm a money manager," meaning I manage people's estates and money and help them grow their money, where to invest. "Right now, virtually everyone I'm seeing, these are millionaires, Gary, they're all going broke. They're all coming to me. Now they want to sell their yacht or their, you know, Lamborghinis. They want to sell their second home in the Hamptons. They don't want anyone to know they're selling it, because they got to keep up social pretenses. But they're desperate, because even though they made $1, $2, $3, $4, $5 million a year, they spent that much. They had no fiscal discipline at all." And he said, "I heard you speaking recently about people who had no fiscal discipline, but they were middle class." And I said, "That's correct. People tend to spend what they have. And when they no longer have the cash to spend, they use their credit card as if I can still buy what I want to buy, but I'll just pay for it later. Then when they can't, and their interest goes from 28 to 58 to 88 to 100% on all their cards." Remember, if you go late on one card, you may not know this, all of your cards charge you increased interest. And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, now you're seeing it in the millionaires." I said, "Well, we got 10 million millionaires in the United States." He said, "We're not going to have 10 million in the near future. They're way overextended. They had it so easy that they believed they couldn't lose. Now they are. They've been living like they're the super rich. They're not. And a whole bunch of them, tens of thousands, went out to buy the yachts or the house in the Hamptons. They overpaid for everything. And now they're unloading it." And he said, "I'm overwhelmed by how many people I'm trying to help sell their assets, and all my colleagues who are financial planners doing the same thing." So when we hear about money people, we're hearing about the celebrities who make a lot of money and spend it. I'm sure very few celebrities as a percentage have actual cash or liquid asset. They may have assets. What do you want to bet? Those are mortgaged. The only asset that's of value is one that you commercialize. If you can't commercialize an asset, don't buy it. And if you create debt, then you're getting yourself into an imbalanced situation, in which case you'll finally be financially unsustainable. And that's no different than the day I said, "I'm going to sell my penthouse." And they said, "You're kidding. You got the nicest penthouse in all South Beach." "Yeah, because I was here before anyone else. I was the first outside of one place on the corner. No other buildings existed. It was just a billboard, small building, across from a park. And I took the whole floor. I designed it myself. I built it myself. No contractors. And that's why it was, you know, something I enjoyed for 15 years. But now I'm seeing the water. And you're not going to beat back the water. I see them every day bringing in barges of sand. They have to pay for that. Because if you didn't bring in thousands of tons of sand every morning, early before people got up, and spread it out with bulldozers, and I'm there every morning running 10 miles seeing them, this would be a desert. So the foreign people are coming in, but not a lot of New Yorkers now. But the other people who don't know the truth of Miami are still investing, but that's all going to dry up. Not only will it dry up, I predict Miami will have the greatest decrease in value of property of any city in America in the next 3 years. And when that happens, there won't be a financial base through the taxation to support local development or local maintenance, even of what they have. So there are places in America where I'm saying now, you shouldn't live in the future. And if you can get out, I would get out. Miami, south end of Manhattan, a lot of places up and down the East Coast. In fact, the whole East Coast from the Carolinas down, you're going to see surges and floods. Now, we don't like this, but you just went through 2 weeks of more unique environmental events than any time in our history. And that is will be the new norm. So, just an idea, the smart people get out before they're forced out. But like my friends who said, what am I going to do? Well, why don't you try living your life in reverse and ask yourself, how many things did you buy you shouldn't have? How did you not save money when you could have? What did you spend on you didn't need? And what should you have been doing to put yourself in a better place? And none of the above mattered. And now they're in crisis. That's a karmic lesson, but that's also true in every other aspect of our lives. So I don't believe we should be building anything in the Caribbean. I do believe, for humanitarian reasons, that we should have a Marshall Plan to go into all the Caribbean islands and offer people an opportunity to help them relocate, if they choose, in other parts of the world that are more habitable for the future. Because if these people didn't have the money except to have a tin roof over their head, what do you think is going to happen with the next storm when they haven't even recovered from this one? The only things that will be standing on any Caribbean island will be the hotels, because they're built at a certain code. But who wants to go to a hotel on an island when the whole island is destroyed, when the rainforest is destroyed, and they never put money into their agriculture? The agriculture that is there is destroyed, and it's not coming back because there's no money for it. So just some thoughts. There's a time not to rebuild. There's a time to vacate and relocate. If I mention to you that there is a town, small town, in Spain near Gibraltar, and that this town is an anomaly. You have beautiful mountains. Some of the most beautiful mountains in the world are in Spain, some of the highest, too, for traveling. And there's pilgrimages people take walking these paths to a holy site. But this one town is unique in that you smell it before you see it. And it's right on the ocean. And as you come around this bend, the smell of plastic and rotten, like garbage, permeates the air. Now, what's unique is this has over 160 square miles of hydroponic greenhouses, more than any other place on the planet. And you think, wow, who's that for? Well, it's for Europe. Europe is the largest market in the world. It's larger than the United States. It's larger than Russia. It's larger, well, it's not larger than China, but it's certainly larger than the United States. So they built thousands of these greenhouses, and some are just huge. And they're growing all the vegetables and fruits and herbs, and they're shipped out every day in these giant trucks to make the trip over, or to boats or planes to Europe. Here's what you don't see. There are 100,000 workers. Let me repeat that. There are 100,000 workers working in those greenhouses. Many of them are working for no more than just the amount that they can use to buy food in a day. They have no water. They have no toilets around. They live in these tiny little plastic sheds, meaning they'll get four poles and put a piece of plastic over it, and then inside they'll get an old chair or couch, and that's where they live. And it's hard to imagine people living in that kind of environment, but that's what they're doing. 100,000. These are slave laborers. Now, would you buy that produce if you knew that someone was working at slave labor conditions in order for you to have that? If you're an ethical person, the answer is no. You'd want someone to have accommodations, a salary that they could live on. But that's not the way it works. So that is not sustainable. Sooner or later, there'll be a time when all that stuff changes, where you cannot continue living this way. You have Moroccan slaves, and you have an ocean of plastic, and 100,000 people were living in an unsustainable environment. So the people in Europe who don't know where their food comes from have food to buy each day. You can drive from the Spanish coast from Barcelona all the way down to the Straits of Gibraltar, and you're going right down the beauty of the Mediterranean coast, and it's just beautiful. And then it's just south of El Portus, after the city of Mazaron, along the Interstate 15, and that's when you see the greenhouses. And so can they sustain that, growing all the crops for a whole continent in one place, in one small area? The answer is no. Sooner or later, that all collapses. They should be having diversified farming all over Europe. Every country should have its own sustainable farming. Sustainable meaning learning the metrics of what makes healthy soil, locally grown produce in season, and having communities that historically been agrarian bring it back. Bring back local farming. Bring back the idea of having something you've grown locally, you're consuming it locally, you're lowering the carbon footprint. That's what we should be doing. That's just a summary of my ideas on that. Now, I promised that we'll take calls. I'm looking here. You can call in, by the way, at 888-874-4888. And we have Paula from Florida. Hi, Paula. Your turn now.
Hey, Gary. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
My question is pertaining to propane generators versus diesel fuel generators. We finally found a nice property. We're staying here in Florida. It has incredible storm shutters, just like your house down in Naples. And we want to put a backup generator in for issues of what just happened. What would your thoughts be on one versus the other?
There's no comparison. Why? Because what did you see when the storm came? You saw zero gasoline and zero diesel available. Also, at the same time, you had a double negative, meaning you had over demand for too limited a supply. And where's that supply come from? It comes from Houston, Galveston. That's the oil refining capital of America. That's where our gasoline and that's where our fuel comes from. It comes on barge ships and it comes on through tanker trucks. That's a longer drive, but that's where we get it. So if that's flooded and they're not opening those up, then you've got limited supply because they're in a hurricane, and now you need it, and you're in a hurricane. And that's why I always take propane. Now, there's two types of ways of getting propane, because propane does not require electricity at a pump in order to get it. It can be a valve is open and pressure. It can be pressure released and pressure fed. You need to get a large tank, preferably 1,500 to 2,000-gallon tank. Get two of them. Keep them full. You run a line to your holding tank, which should be about 500 gallons, and then from that goes into a propane-fed generator. I suggest that people are getting two smaller generators, and what you need is anywhere from a 17,000 to a 20,000 power generator. Most are getting 3,000.
We have a friend that could get us a 22. No, we have a friend that could get us a 22,000 generator.
That's terrific, because that said, that will handle your air conditioners. Because let's say an average air conditioner is pulling 1,000 watts. and your generator, right there goes 1,000 watts. Well, if you have two air conditioners, you have refrigeration and freezers, you have the internet, you're over 6,000 watts. And that's why a lot of people could only use just a refrigeration. That was all, and nothing else would work. They didn't have the power. So this way it gives you the power, and you've got at least a four-month supply. So if there were no other source of energy for 4 months, you would have all the energy you needed. Now, I also believe that you should get solar. There's new types of solar, though Florida is the most exploitive state to get solar. You would think it'd be the best. It's not. Florida's totally political and greedy. And I don't believe anything anyone from Florida tells me. Trust me, I don't. More con artists in Miami than any place else in the world. It's like there's one giant septic tube that runs in and everyone dumps out, comes right out looking, you know, like some anomaly of a sales pitch huckster. Yeah, I could just imagine Preston, what was Preston Foster, the actor in the musical and the Music Man. That's what everyone acts like. Everyone's got a deal, right? Well, people who don't need a deal never talk about one, and people who have nothing are always talking about a deal. They're called confidence people, and their confidence means they gain your confidence, then they hustle you. And boy, Florida is loaded with them on both coasts.
Yes, and it is.
In any case, so you want to get an outside solar company, because they're going to use the newer solar panels. They can reinforce it with solar paint. They have these small chips that are far more powerful. And then you hook that up to a solar generator. And once again, the solar generator, your storm lasts, let's say, 2-3 days. Your propane is used. Then you get sunlight. That's when it kicks in, and your sun. And otherwise, the solar panel itself should be able to handle all your electric needs. So you're literally off the grid. You're actually selling electricity back to the utility companies. Okay?
Okay. We were also thinking of putting in a wind turbine because we're about 85 feet above sea level. We have a nice open field behind the 3,000-square-foot barn. And there's perfect
No. There's too little wind. You just waste your money.
Okay.
No, if you have propane and you have solar, you're set.
Okay.
You're set.
Okay.
And then make sure that you have a water-holding tank that you can put colloidal silver in so that when power goes out for any reason, you'll have backup water.
Okay.
All right? The best to you, Paula.
Thank you. We'll be heading down towards your area in December. Hopefully you'll be around. I'll give you a call before then.
Okay, bye. John from Brooklyn. Hi, John, your turn.
Yeah, I have a question about feedback loops failing. You were saying recently that all these feedback loops, natural feedback loops, are not working anymore. And even in political systems where you report problems and these things are supposed to be solved, but they don't really work that way anymore because they're all congested by, corruption. So you can't even fix problems anymore. So if you report something and they don't get fixed, so that's one problem. The other problem is having sustainable communities or some sort of sustainable checklist for communities around the world that can they can just check these things off to see whether they have it or not, and so they can get it in if they don't have it. So that's another suggestion I would.
Jonathan, if you were to be in Norway or Ireland, throughout the United States, there are multiple communities that are sustainable communities. Would you want you as a member?
I would imagine.
Why?
Because.
What do you do to make it a better world each day?
What do I do to make it a better world each day?
Yeah. Are you healthy?
Yes.
Since when? Last time I saw you, you were over 200 pounds. Play the game with someone else, Jonathan. I've known you a long time. You're a good person. But there's a whole lot, there's a whole big difference between saying there are no solutions. Jonathan, do you remember the other day on the radio I gave a new, what we'll just for want of a better construct, we'll just say is a nihilism. Take it or leave it. If you find value in it, use it. If not, let it go. But I said, question the question when the answer is self-evident. All right? You just did that. You didn't question yourself. Instead of calling and saying, Gary, I have a question. With the existing system that most people are part of, the people who should be helping us are not. The truths they should be open to, they've rejected. The people who they should give a form to, they have censored. The monetary system works against us. Virtually all the industries work against us. So how can we trust them? The answer is self-evident. You stop being a part of it. If you eat their food, Jonathan, then you look in the mirror and that's what you become. And you didn't get overweight by eating bean sprouts. All right? Or having a regular colonic. If you're out there exercising, then you're not going to be taking their high blood meds, nor their statin drugs, nor their anti-inflammatories for arthritis, from sitting in front of computers too long and straining your eyes and creating scoliosis or curvature of the spine. If you're joining in the movement to get back to the land and sustainability, then you will be back to the land and sustainable. Not living in Brooklyn, coming out once in a while to kind of open up that septic system and let it, the overflow come out. Do you understand what I'm saying? Does this make any sense to you that it's time in your life that if you want to have people who do care about what you say, then you've got to know which people to call? If the agencies are not working on our behalf, then create support groups that do. Now, you've been in at least two support groups, maybe more. Everyone in that support group at the beginning of every single week asked their questions, and we were, Lou Ann Panessi, myself, Dr. Martin Feldman, we were there to answer their questions, correct?
Yes.
Okay. No one ever left without us addressing this. Now, how many people did you see come with diseases and 3 months or a year later no longer had diseases?
A lot of people.
We're talking about tens of thousands, not a lot. Tens of thousands. In fact, just today, I had the latest of those health support groups accepted for peer review in a highly respected peer review journal. And that means that other people now will learn what went on in those groups. And we had 85% success at the end of a year. And how was that? No miracle, no magic potions, no magic pills. It was just people being consistent every day. You have a choice to say, I will empower myself by a positive thought. I will disempower myself by a negative thought. And you saw that depression and anxiety were virtually overcome. Unless you wanted to be one of the chronic criers, in which case you saw yourself as a victim and you felt the entitlement of other people rescuing you. In which case, all you do is come to a health support group or listen to my radio show with the idea that somehow you'll be rescued. It's not going to happen. You rescue yourself in life, and then you support yourself with people who can understand the lessons you've learned. Now, the same way, if I want to eat organic and my local supermarket doesn't have organic, I'll go to a food co-op. If my food co-op doesn't, I'll go to a farmer's market. If the farmer's market doesn't have it, then I will go out and do it myself. I remember one of my buddies was one of the owners of Fairway. His name's Dave. Wonderful human being. And his wife was also very nice, a psychologist. And one day I said, you know, Dave, you don't have any organic produce. He said, yeah, I know. I said, why don't we, you know, go upstate and grow it ourselves? So we went upstate and we looked around. We found some property up in Goshen. And I bought some property, bought some dirt farm, which is real deep and thick, very, very rich soil. The richest soil in the world is on a what's called a muck farm or a black dirt farm. And then It was wonderful. And Dr. Albert Ellis is a top guy. Dr. Donald Mullen, a close friend of mine, came in on it. Neil Kramer. There was a state trooper named Kenny. We all did it together as a project. But to know how to do it, I first showed them how to grow organically by teaching them and then teaching thousands of others how to grow organically up at the Fertiller Farm up in Stone Ridge. And then on Sundays when people would leave there after a workshop, driving down by Ellenville and across, we would take them by the dirt farm and they would get all the produce they wanted for free as a gift. And if you belonged to a church or a synagogue, you could take extra. We give them giant, heavy-duty bag, garbage bags they could load up. And then I'd take it down to Fairway. And it was interesting because after about a month, Dave says, "Interesting, Gary, I can't give this stuff away." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Here's a head of regular lettuce, just iceberg lettuce. Here's a head of organic lettuce, locally grown. And it's not iceberg, it's romaine. And it's half the price. I can't give it away. I'm having to dump this stuff." I said, "Okay, then we're before our time. We're too soon." So I tried something else. I went up to a farmer, and we had met him. He was living in Goshen. He'd had this orchard for a long time, and it was one of these unique orchards, and it went up to a bluff, and you could see out for miles, the only high point in the whole area. And I asked him, I said, "Could I pay you to come up on the weekends and just make some cider from these downed apples?" He says, "Sure." He says, "You don't have to pay me." He said, "Down apples create worms and problems. You pick them up." So Neil Kramer and I would go up, and we would load up a truck with lots of apples. We'd take it over to a barn. There are pictures of this up on my website, by the way. You can actually see this. And there we had on the bib overhauls, and I made, because it didn't exist, I made a press, simple hydraulic press with wooden slats using, I used a cherry, which is a hardwood, and then this muslin cloth, which is about 5 feet by 5 feet. And then you take the apples, you wash them in one sink, you take them from the sink, you put them into a blender, giant commercial grinder, and it ground it up into this pumice. You then took this mashed up apples, you put it in the middle of the cloth, you folded the cloth over, and then you put another slat down. And this went about 8 foot. And then when it's totally full, you put a 55-gallon drum with a hose that went from the bottom into the drum. And then the drum had a little nozzle on it. And so I would pump it, and down would come, as you hydraulically push down on the pedal, the plates, the iron plates, would come down and crush, you know, the one below it, then below it, below it, below it, below it. And then the juice would just flow out, and it would fill into the 55-gallon container, the stainless steel container, and then Neil would just take these gallon jugs and fill them up with apple cider and smack a little label on it. And then the deer, there would be at least 10 to 15 deer, and I'd walk out and empty into a wheelbarrow all of the dried, not, it's not dry, it's still moist, but there's apples, and they'd love that. And every week they would come on Saturday and Sunday. We would do up, I think the most we ever did was 500 gallons. We took it right into Fairway, and Fairway was selling it for $4 a gallon, dirt cheap, fresh apple cider, organic apple cider. And we made about $2 profit. We split it 50-50. And it wasn't that I was doing it for the money. I was doing it to prove it could be done. Just like the organic farm. Prove you can do it. So in the world that we have a lot of people, millions of people living in today, they are looking for problems where the solution helps them be more sustainable, healthier, and happier. What you won't find them doing, Jonathan, is saying, "No one, I can't, it doesn't, blah, blah, blah," complaining, whining, and blaming, year in and year out, and not changing. So are you ready to actually change? Or are you going to call me back a year from now and find another reason to complain?
I want to change, basically.
Would you agree you haven't up to this point?
No, I haven't.
Okay. And that's been, what, about 25 years?
Pretty much.
About a quarter century. So isn't it time that you stopped thinking and started doing?
Yes.
And come from love instead of anger?
Yes.
And come without judging society to looking for those in society that are actually doing the right thing?
Yes.
Okay, good. Then welcome aboard. All right? Now let's see you get into some food co-ops. Let's see you get into up on the internet, and you're a master at the internet. That's what you do. You have a very bright mind at figuring out computer systems as an IT expert. So why don't you do this? Why don't you look around the United States? In fact, look around the world. In Portugal, they have sustainable communities. In Ireland, in Scotland, in France, in the United States, in Canada. Look for sustainable communities. Reach out to them. Get their information. And then tell them, here are the assets and skills I have. And I'd like to come and meet with you and take a tour. Maybe go to two or three. Spend a week at each one and see which one aligns with your own interest and what skills you have that could help them. Because it's all based upon fair exchange, meaning you're contributing something and they're contributing their total resources in return to help you. All right? Does that sound reasonable?
Sounds good.
Good, Jonathan. Let me know when you've made that, you know, landing someplace. I think the audience and myself would really like to know that you're doing well.
Thank you. Take care of you.
All the best, Jonathan. Let's say hello to Barbara from Long Island. Hi, Barbara. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. I have cataracts, and I'd like to know, how can I get rid of them without surgery? I don't want surgery.
Mm-hmm. How long have you had cataracts?
About a year.
Okay. How old are you?
74.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you see it coming on?
Not really. Nope.
You didn't at all?
Well, I had to get the stronger eyeglass lenses. If that was your prescription, maybe that was it. But otherwise, right now, the sun, I can't look at the sun. It bothers me. I can't. At night, the light from the cars bother me. I don't drive anymore.
Okay, are you highly disciplined or not? Be honest with me.
Yes.
So whatever you have to do, you're going to do it 100%, right?
Yes, 100%, yes.
Okay, only 100% can help themselves with cataract. Anything less than 100%, you're going to have surgery.
Oh, okay. Understood. All right. Understood.
Now, surgery in and of itself is not bad. It's safe. And then a person never has to worry about cataracts again. But to maintain eye health, you cannot have any meat, dairy, sugar,
nope.
Caffeine, soft drinks, refined carbohydrates, none of that. You
what
have to have
refined, refined carbohydrates are like white potato?
Well, no. It would be white rice, bread, bagels, pastries, pastas. That's your refined carbohydrate.
Don't eat that.
Okay, good. You would have to have a lot of juices, preferably green juices, more like six a day.
Oh, six a day. Okay.
All right.
Yes.
Carrot. This is one of the type of, I would put carrots in one of them along with cantaloupes and yams. And I would also, yeah, and I would also have high fiber in the diet,
what
like 50 grams.
Of what, though? What would be that? 50 grams of what?
50 grams of fiber. Fiber.
Like what type of fiber, like?
Well, blueberry fibers, blueberries,
oh, okay.
Pomegranates, cherries.
Understood. Okay, yep.
Also, I would take the free-form amino acids.
Are there such a supplement?
Yes,
amino
they're called
free-form
amino acids.
Free-form, okay.
I would take N-acetylcysteine, about 500 milligrams a day, preferably on an empty stomach in the morning.
Oh, okay.
I would also take, there's a product called OccuCare.
I've heard of it.
A-C-U-C-A-R-E. That's good. Taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E. That's also good. And then carotenoids. You're going to get carotenoids, probably 20, 30,000 units a day from the juicing. But lutein, L-U-T-E-I-N, and xanthin, Z-E-A-X-A-N-T-H-I-N. The B-complex, 100 milligrams of B-complex. Vitamin C, about 2,000 milligrams, four times a day.
Okay.
Then also red raspberry leaf, bilberry extract, and bayberry, B-A-Y-B-E-R-R-Y, bark. Also
is that a
cayenne.
Supplement? Is that a supplement, bayberry?
These are herbs. Bayberry bark is an herb. Cayenne is an herb.
Okay.
And bilberry extract, well, it's a berry, and it's an extract you can get. So those are the things I would start with, and that reduces oxidative stress, plus quercetin at 2,000 milligrams twice a day, all right?
Twice a day, okay. All right. And how long will they you know, get smaller? How long will it take for them to...
Generally, this will take, if you do it really right... You're looking at probably 6 months to a year.
Okay.
It is not something that's quick.
Understood.
But also, you're getting healthier in the process. Your whole body is benefiting from this.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
All the
Thank
best.
You. Thank you.
Let's say hello to John from New York City. Hi, John. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. I was wondering what diet would you prescribe for someone that's on dialysis? It's and then the other part of my question is regard to bone growth. What can you do for excessive bone growth that's like impacting nerves, things like that? What can we do, I guess? Thank you.
Okay, well, there's several reasons. You have to first ask what is the cause of the kidney problems that led to dialysis. Dialysis doesn't cure the kidneys of anything.
Yeah, but for a patient that's already on dialysis, you know, what can you do and what should you eat?
No, there is no such thing as what you do when you're on dialysis. Every single person is different. It depends upon them. Do they have high blood pressure? Are they suffering from neuropathy, diabetic neuropathy? Is a side effect a disease of the kidneys? It depends upon what caused the initial condition, and that's where you begin your journey. You just can't flippantly say, oh, take this if you're on dialysis. The amount of potassium that you can take is measured because the kidneys at that point can't take a lot of potassium, even though some of the nutrients they need are in potassium-rich fruits. So you have to be very selective. You also have to be selective in the kind of protein. Going to a purely plant-based protein diet, one of the best forms of a protein for dialysis is split pea and also hemp. Also, you have to look at the medical literature, and you can go to PubMed, and once you're on PubMed, Google in kidney dialysis and medical literature on medical cannabis and the cannabinoids, and it will show you the research or studies that have been done up to this point on the use of the cannabinoids and the kidneys. The quality of the water you take in is very important because the kidney can no longer, through the nephron cells and the tubules, filter out a lot of the heavy metals it once did. So you have to look at getting rid of local toxic materials like mercury in your teeth. The silver fillings in your teeth have to come out. But there's only one good way of doing that. There's a holistic way, and you can use the Hal Huggins way of removing mercury fillings. You have to have a holistic dentist, which is easy to Google in your area and find out who that person is. So you get the metal out. You have to then make sure that the person's not taking anything in that promotes lead, like canned foods, or aluminum, which is in everything from deodorants to cookingware. So it's a process, and you really need to be in the hands of an environmental specialist. Now, down in Texas, there is a Dr. Kelly, And Dr. Kelly has an environmental center around Dallas. It's been there a long time. And you need to be, for a period of time, in a chemical-free environment where everything that you eat and drink has been into a form where there's no allergens, there's no heavy metals, there's no toxicants, there's no molds, there's nothing that could impact the kidneys in a harmful way. And then you have to measure. You can't just be taking large amounts of any given nutrient because, once again, the kidney has to process it. And so that is the first step. So first, make sure you get the proper diagnosis, and then put yourself into the hands of a board-certified internist, because an internist is most likely be able to guide you when you're on a plant-based and healthy diet. All right? All the best. We'll finish up our program today with Jay from Brooklyn. Hi, Jay. Your turn. Jay, you're on the air.
Yeah, we have Jay?
I can hear you now. Yes.
Oh, great. Yeah, I was just wondering your views on the economy, the stock market, what you feel of gold and silver these days, and cryptocurrencies.
Okay, cryptocurrencies are not the future. I believe that the economy is a misnomer. There is no such thing as the economy. If tomorrow you lost your job, what kind of work do you do, by the way, Joe? Jay?
I'm a carpenter.
Okay. Do you have savings?
A little.
Okay. Do you have debt?
Not much.
All right. But if you were to lose your work tomorrow, you would have it relatively easy. You could go down to Florida or to Texas or Louisiana, and you can make yourself anywhere from $30 to $50 an hour working for the next year or two or three, because there's going to be more work for carpenters, roofers, electricians, though they're state licensed, and plumbers, air conditioning specialists, than at any time that I'm aware of in recent American history. In fact, it's almost impossible to get any of those people today because a lot of the homes were not destroyed in Florida, but they were in Texas. Big difference. So you've got a plan B. But what happens to if the economy you're in, suddenly inflation goes up? Inflation starts to go up when it comes to the cost of food or the cost of fuel or the cost of insurance, things you might not have planned on. Then you have to say, is my income adequate to prepare me for this? So if you cannot afford the health insurance you need, then the best health insurance you have is prevention. You've got to get healthy and stay healthy. That means you can't cheat. You have to stick with something no matter what anyone says. No matter what anyone wants you to eat or drink, you have to say nope. Because sooner or later, by eating and drinking this way, there's going to be a disease. That's the outcome. It is inevitable. And I'm not going there. And then you look at the larger economy, and you don't want to invest in anything, because right now no one should be investing in anything. You should be getting out of debt, making yourself liquid, sell what you don't need, don't buy anything, so that when the economies, plural, begin to implode, you'll be flexible. For example, earlier in the program, I mentioned someone I know. They're not a friend. They're just an acquaintance in my building. But we had this conversation out of the clear blue. I guess he wanted to share this with me about how many of his clients are now broke. They were making millions per year, but they were spending more. And now when they go to sell things, he's saying, okay, you spent $12 million on a yacht. It's now only worth about $1 million. What do you mean? It could have lost all that value? Yes. Yes, and you know, the people who can buy the big yachts, the 200-foot, the 300-foot, the 500-foot David Geffen, they have the disposable income to afford this. These are vanity yachts. And put another way, and I recently told someone this, don't buy a house in Miami. Why would you? Well, you know, you're on the beach. Okay, you're on the beach. Let's say you spent $2 million on just a small apartment, because that's what they go for. Now you add in your taxes, some of the highest in America. You add in your maintenance, even though you own it, you have no mortgage. All right? Now, you're going to be laying out about $70,000 a year. Based upon $70,000 a year, not including your investment, you could go anywhere you wanted in the world, first class, stay a weekend, stay a week, in the best, most luxurious accommodations, and you could go every month to a different location. Wouldn't you rather be free to go anywhere in the world, to see the world, to see wonderful places, take a companion with you? And at the end of the year, you would still have your $2 million and you wouldn't have any debt. But we don't think that way. We don't realize what something costs us once we've invested in it, how much it costs to maintain it. Look instead at the future and look at the dollar being weak as the different bubbles start to collapse. I see the equity bubble collapsing. 22 to 23,000 has no basis in economic reality. We have an unemployment level, a real unemployment level, around 24%. In different minorities, it's much higher than that, going to as high as 40% in African-American youth. You also have over 150 million Americans living near, at, or just above, below the poverty line. When you have that many people struggling, and you have the average person owning a car and being 9 months late on their payments, that's going to cause a collapse. When you have credit card debt of over $1.3 trillion, that's going to cause a collapse. When you have student loan of over $1.2 trillion, that's going to cause a collapse. When a commercial real estate market is collapsing, walk up Broadway. Walk from 57th and Broadway to 125th and Broadway. You're going to see over 100 stores, some in prime locations, empty. Now, sooner or later, someone will take a gamble and step up to the table, even if the person before him lost everything they have. That's the way casino capitalism works. But it's a game controlled strictly by the landlords, not by the tenants. So we have bubble after bubble after bubble. And I'm not even counting the government bubble, because the government doesn't have to pay any of its money back. And as long as it gives a treasury note, it guarantees by the good faith of the United States it will redeem that note, that IOU. What the government is giving, in effect, is an IOU. You know, and so better to hold your money in gold. The market has been manipulated. Gold should be about 2,000. At time it will be. Silver should go to 200 instead of in the mid-teens. So sooner or later, gold and silver will be the dominant value in a reserve currency. The dollar in T-bills should be held as a backup currency. And I see more mall stores closing. I see more brick-and-mortar stores closing in streets across America. And I see more people creating more debt than ever before. For the first time, once again, learning no lessons. People are buying homes they cannot afford. They're cashing equity out of the homes they do have, which they shouldn't do. Not thinking there's going to be a downturn in the market. There is. And so make yourself liquid, save your money, don't be foolish and invest it, because almost any place you invest it today, you're going to lose it. At least that's my thought on it. Hope that helps you. I'm Gary, and all, we're out of time. Thank you all for calling in. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer. For only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and get here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me
so you can see.
So